Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hello and welcome, welcome dear listener to another episode of the Guitar Nerds Podcast. I am your host Joe Branton, joined this week by Matt Knight.
Hello, Mr. Joe.
Indeed. Hello, hello, Matt. Hello, dear listener. Welcome back. We're going straight in with this episode, dear listener, because Matt is reading off to me random facts. We started talking about just before we were recording about the biggest guitar companies in the world. Who do you think it is, dear listener? Like the biggest? It's Yamaha, which I think is an easy get. Like if you actually think, because maybe a lot of people will go, it's Fender. But, you know, if you think about all the stuff that they sell and the fact that motorbikes count as musical instruments, then, you know, obviously Yamaha.
For tax reasons, a motorbike is a musical instrument. Exactly. Absolutely not. We always, I always joke about this at work with other people that are also product managers at Roland. And I was like, look, you know, it could be worse. You could be a product manager for brooms. You know, maybe you love brooms. You know,
I think they make great effects pedals, actually. It's really good.
I went to a hardware store once, like a proper old school hardware store.
An independent one.
You could basically go in and buy like one screw, which is just like, yeah, they just don't exist anymore. You have to go and buy 1,000 crap screws for $2.99, where you couldn't go in and just buy one screw. Anyway, was in there once, and the guy was like, yeah. Was looking around, sales guy had his order book. He's like, who does your mops? Basically, I was just like, oh, God. And then I was like, on the other scale, you could be a product manager for Yamaha jet skis. And you're like, oh, I've got to test the new Yamaha jet ski. I'm just going to have to go to Barbados and we're going to have a big party and we're all going to have to ride around on jet skis and go, is this the best jet ski ever? So I think we land somewhere in the middle with guitar products, you know. Not quite jet skis, but better than mops.
Yeah.
And I was saying to you before that Shure are one of the biggest global.
Shure are the second, because I think Shure are like the second biggest. Surely two has got to be Fender, but it was Shure.
I think Shure are like the second biggest music company in the world. Unconfirmed, but we did talk about it before we started, and I was like, the size of their business. Obviously, they make lots of great products, but SM58, obviously. They actually put out an article. I can't see when this was dated, but 58 reasons to love an SM58.
Oh, that's a great article.
And I was like, well, you know, we raved about when we did the 40th anniversary DS1. Yeah. We were like,
that's
your
most popular pedal, right?
Yeah, 1.5 million DS1s. Oh. And that's taken from 77 to 2022 or 2021.
Right.
Yeah. No, 2023.
Right.
The 1 millionth SM58 was sold in the early 1990s. Oh, so, like, God. You know, they sold.
And it's still the industry standard. Like, it's not been overtaken by anything.
It absolutely blows my mind. So here's a couple of other ones. I'm just going to quickly...
Hit me and the listeners with some random guitar facts about business.
Yeah, I was... I was going to try and see if there was another cool SM58 one, but they have just put a picture of it being used as a beer tap, which I think is very cool.
Well, that is, well, we're going to talk about the gigs that I've been doing. But
yes.
Signature Brew in Black Horse Road in Walthamstow in London, all their taps are SM58s. All the heads of the taps are SM58s.
The SM58 won a £35,000 microphone blind listening test for a Smashing Pumpkin session with Rick Rubin.
Wow.
So there you go. So SM58, I don't actually know when SM58 came out, but I had no idea, right, that Shure was founded in 1925.
What?
I just assumed they'd like appeared at some point. You know,
58 was introduced. I've got the stat of when the 58 was introduced.
Okay, hit me.
I'll give you a clue. You've got a guess. It is earlier than you think.
Oh my God. Is it? This is the only thing I can think. Is it 1958?
It's 1966, which is still earlier than I think. I know, you know, I know only slightly, but I think of when I think of the 58, I think of like 1980s working men's clubs, microphones with big dents in them.
Absolutely. You
know, that's the 58. So I would have, if I was going to guess, I would be like 78, 79, but 1966.
Well, interesting you say that year, Joe, because 1966 was also the year that Yamaha entered the global guitar market with the release of the FG180, which, you know, we've always, you know, Yamaha, we've always said, and this is no real diss to Yamaha, but when we worked in music stores, they didn't exactly make the kind of nicest to kid. They're not sexy. You know, I was trying to avoid the word sexy, but they just weren't the sexiest of guitars from any kid. But they were very functional.
They did
their job. And that was the Yamaha's first introduction into music, into the electric guitar world. But they'd actually been a company since, I think, 1898.
Right.
I think they'd been a company for a very long time. When I went to Hamamatsu, which is where they are, Hamamatsu in Japan, known as the musical city, because there's Kawai, Casio, Yamaha, and Roland all in the same city. They had a kind of small display in the train station. They had the very first Yamaha piano. Yamaha was established as a reed organ manufacturer by Torakuzu Yamaha in 1887.
That is when, you know,
that's when
Pat Garrett and Billy the Kid were knocking around in the US. It was the Wild West time.
136 years ago.
Hmm. I mean, what's your favorite Yamaha product?
I tell you, I've got a Rogue one for you.
All right.
But Yamaha, obviously, have made some amazing synthesizers, but they once made a synth called, I believe, the GS1. I think it was the GS1. I'm going to have a quick look. GS1 synth, which at the time weighed something like 1 ton.
What?
Okay. I'm just going to put massive synth into Google. So basically, they made a synth way back. Oh, GX1, sorry.
GX.
Yamaha GX1. I think we talked about it on the pod before. Cost $60,000 in 1975.
Oh, yes.
Weighed 1 ton because it came with its own stand and speaker system and foot pedals. And was basically Corbins in one. 300 kilos. And the pedal board and stand added an extra 87 kilos. And it had tube-powered speakers, of which there are four of them, which also weighed 141 kilos, which came to a total of 951 kilos, or 2,096 pounds. It cost the equivalent...
Found one for sale.
It cost the equivalent, Joe, in today's money, of $412,000.
What? I just found one for $60,000.
They only made less than 100, and they basically went to famous musicians.
Right.
So, yeah, that's Yamaha. Let's see if I can hit one more crazy fact. In 2019, this is coming from gitnux.org. Looks like a guy who does a market data website for music. So, don't know. Untested source here. In 2019, China was the leading manufacturer and exporter of electric guitars, contributing to over 40% of global production.
Wow.
And in 2019, the average price of unit per unit of electric guitars sold was $442. Mm. Obviously, probably a big change now post COVID. So, yeah, interesting. Very interesting. But for me, the Shure fact blew my mind. That was...
I wonder what they're on now, if they sold a million, you know, 30 years ago.
So what was that, 66 to early 1990s?
Yeah.
So what's that, 20...
Well, so like sold 30 years, over 30 years.
30 years, they
sold a
million.
And we've had another 30 years since then.
And sales have probably grown exponentially. I mean, they've got to be on, like... 3 million, I would have thought. I was going to do what's 1 million divided by, let's call it 30. So they're doing about 33,000. Let's call it 33,000 a year.
How? SM58s don't break.
They just get lost like guitar picks. Let's call it, 33,333 a year divided by 12. They're selling about 2,700 a month. And then if you divide that by 30 days, you're probably selling about 92 SM58s a day. Divide that by 24. So about 3 an hour.
Well, that's
worldwide, continuously all year. And then they've also got, you know, SM57s. It's amazing, isn't it? It's just one of those products. And I would imagine that SM58s have probably gone largely unchanged since their invention, really.
Yeah.
It's been, you know, they're just possibly one of the most recognizable brands. But they seem to be, I know this is Guitar Nerds podcast, Joe, but this might be relevant for some listeners,
seem to be
losing a bit of... I would say potential market share to Rode, because I don't know if you've clocked it, Joe. I'm sure many of our listeners have. The Rode wireless lapel microphone seems to be clipped to every possible YouTuber on the planet. And it's one of the most, I find it one of the most off-putting things when all of these people have got this like little black box, like, or they're holding it. And I'm like,
oh, this trend for YouTubers to hold lapel mics. I hate it.
So weird. Like, you just would have thought, use a shotgun mic on top of your
just get SLR.
Do you know what I mean? I find it very bizarre.
Yeah.
But yeah, sure, they make some fantastic products.
They do. Well, there you go, dear listener. There's sort of 10 minutes of music industry facts for you about
Wow, your friends.
But this episode, so I've put my camera in front of my screen again. I have to do this. This episode we actually called Boss Bass Bangers.
Bangarang.
We do want to talk about the new Boss. Boss released a small slew of bass-related products. They did the Boss ME90B, which is kind of the flagship thing. They released the Katana head for bass, and they released a matching cabinet as well. So we're going to talk about that. We're going to have some demos about that sort of thing later on the podcast, and obviously it's handy to have Matt here to talk about that. If you want to check out a good demo for it, I did one, dear listener, over on the Guitar Nerds Instagram. I also shared it on the Guitar Nerds Facebook group as well, so go and have a look. I demo some of the sounds, and in fact, a lot of people have asked questions about it, so we're going to try and answer some of those a little bit later on the podcast. We're also going to talk about a little bit of news, probably. There seems to be, after the warm audio Moog pedal copy, other companies are coming out of the woodwork making other Moog style pedals, so we're going to talk a little bit about that. Matt's been checking out his Eventide H90, so he's going to report back in more detail on how that sounds. Of course, Dear listener, don't forget the competition is still underway. We're in the third week now, I think, of... the third week of our Vintage Guitars Pro Shop giveaway, dear listener. So you can go and find one of the posts on any of our platforms, Facebook, Instagram, Patreon. And all you've got to do is come up with a name for the Vintage Pro Shop that we designed with you, dear listener. And you're in with a chance of winning. We've got next week, and at the week after that, Matt and I are going to have gone through all of the suggestions, put all those names into a hat, and we're going to do a bit of a live stream where we pick a winner to win that Vintage Guitars Pro Shop. So that's going to be great. Make sure you enter. And of course, dear listener, you can enter as many times as you like with as many different names as you want. Hopefully you'll get something that Matt and I will like and we'll pick. All you've got to do is make sure you tag a different friend every time you enter. And that's it. As many entries as you want.
Just a different name every time, please.
Yeah, exactly. Just I spoke about it last week, dear listener, but someone has entered 50 times tagging different people, but with the same name suggestion. And if I don't like that name, that's only one. That's only one entry.
It's only one. Yeah.
He's put in all this work. But Oh, well. To kick things off, I just got back from a couple of nights of playing shows. My band Polymath.
Where did you play, Joe?
We did two shows. Our first shows for 2024. We're just trying to tick over as we're about to head into the studio. The first show was in Nottingham. Second one was in London. Very different shows. In Nottingham, we played a place called JT Sur, which is a venue that we often play when we go there because the promoter there is a good friend and a very, very good promoter. He puts on very popular nights there. So people kind of go because the music he curates is always interesting and different. He has a core demographic of people that come out to the shows. But JT Sawyer's is actually a converted fruit and veg warehouse.
Of course it is.
He's soundproofed. He's allowed to use it and he's turned it into a venue. And, it's bring your own booze, of course, because it's just like a warehouse just outside of town sort of thing. So people come down with their own booze. It was great because we sold it out. I think it's only something like a 70 cap, but it was great. We sold it out. People were turning up and were getting turned away, which isn't nice, but for them. But it's kind of nice for us to have had so many people show up, which was really
good. Always good to have a full room, whether it's 20 people or 2,000 people. It's always good, isn't it?
Exactly. And that was that's a very much a floor show, which I always like because, at those sorts of things, like the last time we played there, people were crowd surfing. But the problem is when you get to the front, there's no like stage or anything. They're just getting lobbed onto our pedal boards, which is always a problem. Didn't happen this time, but I think, we're a bit older and probably so are our audience. So
we've had enough of that.
Exactly. But that was good. We played with a French band from Lyon called Dead Kiwis, who are very much Dillinger Escape Plan.
As in dead Kiwis as in dead New Zealanders, or dead Kiwis as in dead the bird, or dead Kiwis as in the fruit a Kiwi.
I kind of like the idea
of the last one, like a literal dead Kiwi, like a Kiwi fruit.
Yeah, I hope it's that one. I hope it's that
just
one.
Just totally dead.
I'm really not sure, but they were brilliant. They were very much... Dillinger Escape Plan-esque, so super crazy. A lot of their sound hinged on an Earthquaker device's data corruptor, which was really interesting to hear that pedal being used kind of well, because it's such a tricky pedal to use. If you haven't checked it out, dear listener, it's a kind of a fuzz pedal, but it gives you a fuzz sound, a square wave sound, and then an oscillator as well that you can blend the volumes of and then edit the various factors of each of those things. But it does a great job of being like a fuzz pedal that then when you finish playing, it will go ooh, every time you stop a note. And they use that very much as almost artificial whammy drops in between chord progressions and stuff, which was very cool. They had great names for their songs, right? Sometimes at first I thought it was funny, I don't know, maybe a translation thing or something like that. But then I realized they just weren't taking themselves too seriously because they would be, this next song is called Satan 666, which is just brilliant. But then the song after that, he was like, this next song is called Rock. The best name for any song ever. So I was a big fan of that.
Oh dear. Yeah, they the only thing I would say is if you Google dead kiwi, I'm not really a fan of the results that come up.
Oh right.
Dead kiwis is yeah, well I Googled that too also. Oh, right.
Okay.
Not great. So, you know, just think about that next
better
time
name.
You
name better name band. People better name. But yeah, so that was Nottingham, and the next night we played in Signature Brew, Black Horse Road in London, which was great. That was we got to we were headlining that one, packed that one out. It was great. We got to play with Projections, which was really nice. I took my vintage precision bass, so as in not an old precision bass, as in vintage the brand, dear listener.
Oh, I was gonna say, I was like, wow, brave.
No, yeah, no, I don't do that, but yeah, I took that because I got they have their standard V4, which is their precision bass. They do it in a silver burst with a lacquered maple neck with a vintage tint, so very much a 50s style P, still with Wilkinson hardware and Wilkinson pickups. And you know, I think I paid £300 for it. Sounded great. Was brilliant. You know what was nice about using it instead of any of my like 57 style precision basses is I needed to give it a little setup beforehand, and the truss rods accessible through the top of the nut. No,
it's one of those things, isn't it? It's like I've come across that and you're like, I think I can't remember what guitar I've got, but yeah, when you have to take the neck off.
Oh no, yeah, I'm that's what I'm like, saying. The Fender
it's just
ones.
The worst.
The Fender ones are the worst because you've got to take the neck off for it. But with the vintage one, it's accessible through the top of the nut. So I was able to do a little quick tweak, and it was so much better. So much better than having to deal with those the old Fenders.
I just think you can't beat the old Music Man at the heel
rotary
exposed one. That's just really way good. Better.
Yeah, it's a really way good better. Design. Yeah, I'm a sucker for vintage correct stuff, but I will admit that when you are at a show in a sound check and you realize you need to adjust your neck, being able to do that without having to take the neck off, it was very stress-free. I did really appreciate that.
Guitar Nerds is sponsored by Stringjoy Guitar Strings, the world's first true guitar string custom shop. The thing that I love most about Stringjoy is just their attention to detail, their dedication to making their strings the best in the world. And that's a labour-intensive task that they don't shy away from. Stringjoy are also innovative. They're always looking for new ways to make strings better. As guitar players, we've become so used to all the shortfalls of commercially available strings that we stopped even looking for them to be better, last longer, intonate well, easily. Stringjoy bring all of that to every pack of strings they make, and they're available almost as readily as any other generically made guitar string. Stringjoy strings are available at stringjoy.com and at 400 plus dealers across the globe. If your local store doesn't stock Stringjoy yet, ask them to.
That's why we've improved things. But we haven't had to improve things much.
No.
You know, in the 60, 70 years of the of a Fender guitar, or, you know, 80 years of an electric guitar, I haven't had to change much. No. But just those small changes do definitely make a difference.
Absolutely.
I think.
Absolutely.
What was the rest of yours and Tim's rig then, Joe? Back on the MS3s.
Still using the MS3s. Yeah, still using MS3s. Tim, Tim's loving his Roland Jazz Chorus. He's got the Jazz Chorus 40, and he's running a little setup with the MS3 powering. He basically has a Hampstead Soundworks Comet, a sort of mid-push tube screamer-like overdrive. That on all the time into the front of it, and that's his core sound. The MS3's doing an awful lot of the hard lifting, and then a handful of other bits, the Time Bender, Demodash Tape, Echo, Boss DM2, Boss DD3, you know, so it's basically a lot of time pedals and a few other bits.
A lot of delay.
But yeah, it was a pretty standard setup for us. Other than that, I was still using my a pair of Neodymium Ashdown 12-inch speakers and a little 500-watt Ashdown head. But, you know, everything sounded great. It was still a fantastic rig, and our rigs seem to be getting smaller and smaller. But I think it will probably be one of my last shows with my current pedal board, because the more time I'm spending with the Boss ME90B, the more I'm really, really enjoying it. Maybe that's a good place for us to segue into talking about
absolutely
the Boss ME90B.
Absolutely. My question was going to be, are you ever going to go full digital? Is that it? Is this, you know, are you slowly, you know, been dipping your toes in the water? The rigs have been getting smaller, you know, because at one point you were touring like heads and 4x12s and all of that.
It's getting smaller.
Yeah,
it's all getting smaller. And as long as, you know, as long as you can keep things sounding good, and I still don't believe that PAs are good enough now, you know, to handle, look at the variety of those two shows I played. An old sort of school PA at a fruit and veg place, and then a professional venue with a projector, you know, projections and stuff the next night in London. If we were running GT1000s or Quad Cortex or anything, at one of those shows would have sounded good, and at one of those shows we wouldn't have been able to play. You know, amps are still a necessity. I just love the consistency of digital stuff, but I feel a jazz chorus being solid state offers a very, very similar level of consistency.
Yes, yes. And I just think massively overlooked, but I was talking to Niall from What We Do in the Shadows, and so I watch you from afar, and they're going on tour in the US, I think, and they have all switched to JC120s.
Right, yeah, great. I tell you what, one of the other bands in Nottingham had a Jazz Chorus 77.
Oh, yeah.
What's that?
77 was 70 watt 2x12, I think.
Right. It looked a similar size to the. It looked a very similar size to the
80 watt 2x10.
It was a 210. Wow. Okay. Yeah. It looked a similar size to the 40. And at one point, I always picked up because I thought it was Tim's 40. And then I saw it had a toggle switch on it that's not on the 40 and realized it said 77. That's a lot. 80 watts.
It basically went a bit like this: JC120, JC60, JC160, JC80, JC200. That's the one you want. That's the 200 watt head with the matching 2x12 200 watt speaker cab. JC50, JC120, which is the head. JC77, 55, 20. That 20 was cool. They were made in Italy. They were like tiny little miniature ones with 2 5-inch speakers. JC85, JC90, JC40, JC22.
Wow. There you go.
It's a lot of JCs. It's actually, I think, the longest running amp of JC120 is the longest running production of an amplifier in guitar history.
Don't think 76, isn't it?
76.
75. Unchanged since 75.
It's
too loud. That's what it is.
It is the best.
Because it was made in 75 before PAs were up to much.
Yeah,
it was the one reason Tim didn't go for the 120 was, like, we tried one out and we were like, I can't get this over half of
the
one.
But the good thing is they stay so clean. Yeah. I think if the one I haven't tried, but the one I would be keen to try before we go back to loop background to ME 90B is the JC80, because that was
the
1x15.
Very cool. That's,
but then really again, cool. You sort of need two speakers for the full stereo chorus effect, so it's
I wonder if you could split coil the speaker.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
In the market for investment-worthy bags, watches, and fine jewelry, Rebag is the answer. Rebag is a luxury resale platform where each piece is carefully inspected by experts to ensure quality and authenticity. Use Rebag to buy and sell finds from the world's top brands, including Louis Vuitton, Chanel, and Cartier. Head to Rebag.com and get up to 15% off your first purchase as a member with code REBAGNEW. Shop today at Rebag.com. That's REBAG.com. And use promo code REBAGNEW for up to 15% off your first purchase as a member.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit BetterHelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
I think actually, if I remember rightly, some of them actually have a separate output for a separate speaker, but
that's how they get
around. But anyway, Joe, let's talk about your slow change into the world of bass multi effects. Then tell me how you've been getting on with the ME90B.
Well, the ME90B, dear listener, this is really interesting just because I think the ME series traditionally have been affordable multi-effects for people getting into effects. I certainly feel that's how Boss pushed them. They were almost student pedals. They were like, here's all your stuff in one. And definitely, you know, when I was a kid, you know, that's what bands were getting to start with. Were those multi-effects. So you had a bit of everything and you probably only spent £250, which was a lot of money, but you know, you had every effect. It was great. And having the preamps were brilliant. If you had the ME50B, having the kick drum was hilarious. But it's
yeah, well, you got to think, you know, if you go way back, 88, Boss ME5, right. The world's first multi effect. Or actually, should we say guitar multiple effects?
Yes. That is what they all say on them, isn't it?
That is what they all say. And that was actually the ME5 was compressor, overdrive, EQ, chorus, delay, reverb. So it was actually a CS2, an OS2, a GE6, a CE2, and a DD2.
Did you mean OC2?
No, OS2.
What is OS2?
Oh, overdrive distortion. Overdrive.
Right, yeah. Okay, fine.
Yeah. Yeah. And it had actually had those analog and digital effects built into it. So
very cool.
You know, very cool. But yeah, I think you're right. It was just one of those things where, for me, the first one I had, I think, was ME33.
Guitar Nerds is sponsored by iZotope and Native Instruments, two companies who provide the bulk of the recording and editing tools used by Guitar Nerds. If you have a home studio or if you're thinking about getting into demo recording from home, then iZotope and Native Instruments provide the tools that you need to make premium quality recordings with ease and with virtually no equipment other than your guitar and laptop. iZotope make all the voice editing and audio repair tools that I use for the podcast each week, and Native Instruments Guitar Rig 7 is one of the best, most comprehensive collections of virtual effects and guitar amplifiers available anywhere. Use discount code NERDS10 on any product in the iZotope and Native Instruments catalog for 10% off their fantastic range of tools.
That sounds, because the first ones I saw were the, I've got and still got the 50B and the 70. And in fact, okay. Polymath used the 70. Up until last year, we used to have an SPDSX running into an ME70, and Crispy, our drummer, used to use the expression pedal running through like the delay oscillation to manipulate samples off of the SPDSX, because the 70 was great. It's a great sounding pedal.
Yeah, no, the ME33 was one of those, go back to the 90s, where, you know, you had those like screens that always had, they were like, LED screens behind a bit of plastic that always had some sort of image on them.
Right.
Do you know what I mean? A bit like a Game and Watch from the
80s. I know what you mean. Yeah, perfect.
And it had three buttons and then bank up and down. And again, was, I guess the ME series has gone through a bunch of changes, but it wasn't until, probably ME50 where it went to sort of no screens. Here's all just control knobs, and you can basically dial in your sound however you want.
Yeah, and then you use GT for, or
Exactly.
Yeah, yeah, GT for all of that, all the screen-based stuff.
But, you know, the big one for the longest time for bass players was ME50B because there was nothing else that did that. Three buttons, one for filter or tone, one for drive or synth, and then one for delay or modulation. And there wasn't really anything else that covered any of those bases, and that product was discontinued about 10 years ago. And there's been nothing really, you know, up when we were sort of leading and thinking about ME90B, nothing else in the market for bass players. You know, bass players effectively have the tag on to other big guitar multi-effects. Yeah, like, exactly. You know,
well, I use the MS3, for example, because it's got some bass-specific stuff on it.
Yeah, yeah. Or you know, and I guess in the world of stomp boxes, there are people that make bass specific stomp boxes, but you know, a lot of things are just like, oh, it's for anything. Whereas I think there's been a real gap for a dedicated product for bass players, you know, and I gave it to you and you had to play around with it and you were giving me some sounds and I was watching the sort of, you know, the video that we put together and I was like, man, there's sounds out of this that are just amazing. And I'm just like, actually, you could spend £250 on a single stomp box that makes that one sound. And you know, you've got something here that's battery powered, you've got USB-C so you can use it as a interface, you know, you can add a Bluetooth editor so you can, you know, edit it remotely.
Yeah,
you've got all of those sounds, you know, you've got synth sounds, you've got more bass amps in here than anything else that we make, synth sounds, drive sounds, delay sounds, you've got that amazing control pedal, and to please you, Joe, it's even got an XLR balanced output with a ground lift.
Which is actually great. I mean, yeah, for this, we were going to do a little bit of a live demo. I've also recorded the track, dear listener, but because of the ME90B's flexibility, I can just run it straight into my interface through the XLR out, and I get the, it loads up a cab sim on if I do that. And so I get the full throttle, you know, this is its root sound is essentially giving me a Sans amp, you know, preamp DI style thing straight into the interface, which is fantastic. And yeah, it's something like 19 amp models. Cause at first I was like, I really love this. And then I was like, but of course, all these sounds, all these things I can get on GT and I have the GT1000 core. I just need to spend more time with the GT1000 core. Then I realized, actually, no, it has more.
Yeah.
It has more than that when it comes to bass amp models. Obviously, there's some, you know, that when it comes to flexibility and signal paths, it's less flexible. But when it comes to bass, and so, well, when it comes to me playing bass, actually, I don't have a complicated signal path. Because I tend to be using one or two effects at a time and normally in series. So I don't have to worry about any of that stuff. I need a good amp sound. I need drives and octaves, a good filter, and then, you know, some modulation and maybe a bit of delay stuff for fun. And this does all of that to an incredibly high standard for a very reasonable price.
Yeah, I think, you know, I just remind myself, what are they now? 3, 4, 5 English pounds. I mean, that's pretty good. In my opinion, I think that's pretty, it's actually pretty good. I also realized I didn't clock this, you know, got too much to do, Joe. I'm a busy man, but you can actually connect our wireless foot controllers to it as well because you've got the Bluetooth module on there.
Oh, really?
So you could actually connect the FS1WL or the EV1WL if you wanted even more foot switches.
Wow. Does it have a normal expression out if you want to do that by jack or?
No, right, so it's just via the Bluetooth on there as well. But I was just trying to answer the question around, and I would have looked at my phone, but I used the phone for a camera. I was trying to have a look around at the chain because I believe you can set up different chains, but I can't remember.
Oh, you probably can on Tone Studio.
Yeah,
I mean, bear in mind you can do it for Katana on Tone Studio.
Yeah, you can do it for Katana. I'm not 100% sure if you can or not because obviously it's more of a fixed pedal board.
I think I read that on the crib sheet for this product.
But I mean, it is amazing, really, just for like messing around and playing around. I was just super impressed. You know, and it's nice to have something that's dedicated for bass players in my opinion. Because there's too many things now where, but like I said, bass players get tagged onto the sideline and it doesn't feel like a product built for them. And I think this is, you know, something that you could just take to a gig. You can go straight XLR out or for recording and away you go.
Well, you can do both as well. You can send the XLR out to front of house and you know, send your normal, the normal output to your amplifier, and it's got everything. Preamps.
Yeah. Oh, and it's got a send and return, isn't it, as well? So if you've got a little fuzz or something you want to use.
Something external you want to add in. Yeah. Really, really great for that. Even a blend controller as well, if you want to blend in, you know, a little bit of your clean signal as well, which they also assign a foot switch to, which is very, very useful. And like the MS3 or the ES5 or ES8, you can use it in memory or manual mode, and like GT, I guess, as well. So the manual mode, dear listener, allows you to turn on and off effects one by one if you want a more, you know, sort of traditional stomp box feel. And memory mode allows you to assign, you know, several changes with one foot switch, which is exactly how I'd use it, especially considering there are things like, you know, because of course, if you're going to put every effect onto one board, on something like the ME, you have to have lots of effects assigned to one switch, and then you choose which one you can turn on or off. That's the trade-off in comparison to GT. That's the limitation. And unfortunately, octavers and compressors are on one foot switch, which are two things for me that have to both be on. But fortunately, because you can run it in like a scene-changing mode,
Yeah, but you can run, you can use mod, can't you? There's a compressor type in mod, and then there's an octave under synth. Is that right?
Oh, right. Okay, yeah.
I think we talked about this before offline, Joe, and then you probably forgot, but there is, I believe, and I'm going to confirm this now. Yeah, so under comp/FX1, there's an octave setting, but there's also three different types of compressor: comp, mcomp, decomp. But if you look at FX or the mod section, which is top section. Right, there
the
is also
a compressor.
There's also a comp there as well, and I would actually probably use that comp, and that will sit at a slightly different point in the single signal chain, which is probably what you want, because you want to hit the octave first and then you want to hit the then you want to hit the compressor.
Sure, yeah, absolutely.
So there you go. I've solved your problem, Joe. I've made it even better for you.
Yeah, clearly. but yeah, this pedal is wicked. I want to show you what it sounds like, dear listener. I'm going to play a track as well, but I thought I'd just do a little bit of, you know, a little bit of showing you what the pedal actually does here. This is just... I've just set up like the natural amp tone. This is just a natural amp tone with a little subtle boost to the bass and treble. And I just think this is a great recording bass sound. Just, you know, I know that's, you know, we're not talking about anything crazy there. But then the octaver, they managed to capture that like OC2-ness in what is a digital octaver. It sounds great. And you can add in, I probably went a little bit too low there. We're on it. I've got, remember, stop at the G. Ooh. but then you've got like, add a little filter in. And you've got like a Thundercat style thing straight off the bat. One of the things, and I do want to address a couple of things people were talking about on
Facebook. You said there was a few questions.
Yeah, a few things that people were mentioning. You know, Sam Brooksby was getting very excited about it because, of course, he was saying, well, look, you know, a Sans amp is 250 quid. This is 100 quid more for everything, and you've got a Sans amp in there. So there's a lot going on here. But one of the things people came up a couple of times was it'll be great for everything except for drives. And that's because, of course, the ODB3 Boss's really only bass overdrive pedal has a very love-hate relationship to it because it's so fizzy and toppy. It's a very specific tone. Like Flea has made it work for years. You know, I know it's also James Johnston from Biffy Clyro uses it for an awful lot of stuff. So it has its place, but it's a very Marmite love-hate bass tone. And the only other bass drive Boss release is the BB1X, the bass driver, which has a very scooped modern feel to it. So there's nothing really that Boss do, which is a traditional drive for bass on an individual stomp box. But I used, and I've spoken about it on the podcast loads over the years, I used the MS3 bass overdrive and have done for years. I loved the bass overdrive that came on the little Boss Cube. I thought that was fantastic. Mm. GT is loaded full of great sounding bass drives. And I can confirm that, you know, just the simple overdrive on the ME90B is also. Is also just really great sounding, just a really straight up versatile overdrive. And that's just the standard one. You've got a load to choose from. One of my favorites is actually not a drive as such. It's the synths that they've added, like a square wave synth, which, Matt, I've got an SY200. I struggle with the SY200. Because there's a lot there, and I'm not a very patient man.
Yes.
And that's why I think
the thing, isn't it? Sometimes. Yeah. I think that's why a lot of people loved SY1, because it was very simple and straightforward. And SY200 was there for people who wanted to be able to save a few presets and do something a little bit different.
Exactly. And what I loved about the SY1 and what I loved about the synth sounds on the ME was I haven't done anything right now. I have just moved from an overdrive. I've changed the rotary round to being on the synth square wave, so I've not touched any of the actual controls. And it sounds great. Like, I don't have to do anything. I've just got to select it, and it sounds great.
I think, and that's always the important thing for me, certainly with the ME products, is they're very, you know, to use the term WYSIWYG, you know, what you see is what you get. They're super simple. You never have to think about it. But it's interesting, you know, ODB3, you know, you touched on it lightly there, came out in 1994. You know, so you start to think, you know, that's like 30 years old.
Yeah. And that was COSM was the name of the tech on the 50B.
On the ME50B.
And now it's Aired on the... which I think is the same that's on GT, right? Aired?
Yes. Yes. Augmented Impulse Response Dynamics. Proudly, proudly named by me. but yeah, I think it's just a great product. I think it's really well priced. I think it's got loads in there. I think even if you're an amateur bass player and you just want some great bass sounds, you don't want to fork out for loads of pedals, or your pedal board's up for more guitar orientated stuff, I think it's just a great fun thing for not a lot of money.
Exactly. And the things that I've shown you, dear listeners, so far are kind of the sense, and maybe excluding the synth, are the sensible things that you need, like good sounding amp, good sounding octaver. We haven't done the compressors, but I assure you they're great. You know, good sounding drive. Those are the backbone of bass stuff. And then you get these fun, like, additional things that not necessarily every bass player is going to use, but it's fun to have them. Stuff like this. A really nice sounding shimmer delay, which if you're a bass player and you are on individual stomp boxes, you're probably not going to shell out £250, which is, you know, kind of what shimmer delays cost. You're not going to shell out that sort of money for a shimmer delay, because you're going to use it once in a blue moon. But if you've got one on your board, maybe you will use it a little bit more.
Well, I think that's the thing, isn't it? It's about those accessible sounds. I mean, we just talked about last week about spending nearly £1,000 on an Eventide H9, which has got some great sounds in it. But, you know, you're getting similar sounds to what I'm getting for a pedal that costs three times as much or three times less.
Exactly. And one of the most fun things, we'll finish up the sort of this demo now, dear listener, but one of the most fun things is the expression pedal, which you can assign to various things. You can make it a whammy, pitch up, pitch down, which I hate. Or you can assign it
pitch
to...
Pitch down on bass is... pretty extreme.
Just the whammy sound is just tacky, but it's fine. The guy in the Boss demo made it sound very good, but you know, it's just not for me.
He's an awesome bass player. The guy that did that, yeah, he's awesome.
Very good player. One of the things you can assign it to is delay oscillation, which is so much fun because you can do things on top of the existing delay tone that you've got. So stuff like this.
I mean, you definitely have to spend a lot more money on a fancier boutique pedal for that kind of sound.
yeah, exactly.
You really would.
But that's the Boss ME90B. I'm really, really excited about this pedal. I really rate it. All the sounds on there are great. I just think, you know, people were commenting saying, you know, I'm not even really a bass player, but I do have a bass. This looks like a great recording tool. And I would say, yeah, this is an alternative to, you know, if you're not someone who uses Helix or GT or something like that, where they're going to have bass subfolders that you can use as a guitarist. If you need a tool that does a bit of everything for bass, this is great. My favorite feature of this is actually the amp sounds. Now, I'm just using the studio tone for this because it's clean, easy to dial in for this purpose. But there are so many 19 amp models on there. So there's something for every type of bass player, and they all sound recording ready, really good. I think they're fantastic. I'm going to play a little pre-recorded demo now, dear listener, so you can hear the Boss ME90 in action a bit more properly. Pedal is £350.
Oh dear, it's a great way to finish. I love it.
Yeah, big fan. Really, really good job, Matt.
Indeed. Yeah, I'm proud to say that I did everything. No one else helped. No, that's not true. Yeah. I just take the glory. There's a lot of hard work happening elsewhere.
Anyway, we've got a little bit of time left on the podcast, but not enough time to get through everything. So, Matt, it's your choice. We can talk about the H90 and what you've been getting on with that. That would kind of continue the pedal thing, or we can move across into news and talk about the Moog things.
I was actually going to suggest, Joe, because it leads into, I think you're doing an extra additional episode for listeners on a bit more in depth, but maybe we should talk about the news of the Tom DeLonge.
Let's do that. What a good
idea. Let's do that, because then that will lead you nicely into your the other thing. The aliens have landed, UFOs everywhere, Tom DeLonge, has a new signature guitar.
That's right. So I did briefly mention it on last week's episode, dear listener, but we're going to be putting out another podcast this week, a podcast recorded with Tom, not Tom DeLong, but Tom, the guy who owns House 95 Guitars, a guitar company who I met for the first time at, I can't remember, the Birmingham show, maybe? Mm-hmm. Or The Birmingham show, where essentially his entire company is making clones of the various guitars from Tom DeLong's back catalogue, from his stickered-up HSS Stratocaster through to his original single humbucking Stratocaster with the what was the name of that pickup? The Invader humbucker, the single humbucking Invader in the bridge.
Oh, was it Dirty Fingers in the ES-33?
ES-333. He had the Dirty Fingers in that, and then back to the Starcaster, which is kind of an amalgamation of his Gibson and his Fender previously. Now, interestingly enough, so that's House 95 Guitars. They've always done that. They make their own version of a Starcaster, slightly different top horn to, you know, to not be a Starcaster. And I can't remember what they call it. It's called like the punk caster or the alien caster. I don't know, you know, something. so he makes that. It's brilliant. It's very affordable. He has the bodies made overseas, and then he puts everything together, specs them up. He even does them with the accurate sticker packs to what Tom has on his.
That is cool, because I've seen some of the ones that he's got in his guitar rack, and like one's got like a little UFO on it and stuff.
Coming out of the F hole and stuff. That's very cool. So he does that. But in addition, Fender have just launched the Tom DeLong Starcaster. House 95 Guitars are good friends with Fender and with Blink-182's management, and they were able to get a few of the Fender models ahead of release, and they're actually doing a giveaway for one of the Starcasters, which we'll be talking about on the podcast. But it's really interesting to note the difference between the Fender and the House 95 Starcaster, which we'll talk about in a bit, but also probably the most contentious thing about the Starcaster is that this is the first Fender guitar with Fender on the headstock that was made in Indonesia.
Really?
Yeah. So that's interesting. A big thing there. That's a big change for Fender right there. Mm. Especially considering the £1,100 price tag. On the Fender version. You know, we spoke about everything that happened with Gibson, increasing the price of all the Epiphones. This is kind of the same thing, but Fender have done it a little bit more,
I think,
secretly.
Yeah. I think what's interesting, though, is that this actually, on Fender's website, is $100 cheaper than the Strat. And I see the Strats are going quite cheap on the market now, and I wondered if they were like, maybe we've sort of already rinsed a lot of the pockets of Blink-182 fans, so maybe we need to make this one a little bit cheaper. Yeah. I did like his explanation of it. I just had the page up, and he was just like, yeah, basically I put my electronics in it, and I'm like, but you basically took most of the electronics out. Like one pickup, one volume. I think the pink one's very cool. I think the gold one looks cool as well. I just think it's just me, Joe, but I just think a covered pickup looks better than an uncovered pickup.
Sure, but that wouldn't be very much the aesthetic. There's nothing retro or vintage correct about that.
He should grow up.
So one of the interesting oddities about this, other than the fact that it's an Indonesian Fender for £1,100, is that they've gone for a satin finish body on all of these models with a gloss neck. 12-inch radius, like he had on his Epiphones, gloss neck, Tom DeLonge's custom shop Starcasters that he plays are gloss bodies and satin necks. And in fact, all of his guitars have always been satin necks, and he has always been quite a proponent of satin necks. So it's very unusual that they've chosen to do this in a vintage gloss neck. Also, you know, I was following the live stream on House 95 Guitars when this guitar was launched, and one of the things people kept saying was, because of course, dear listener, I'm Mr. Vintage Correct, I would like a gloss neck on everything ever, but most people, especially the sort of wimps who are playing power chords with their guitar strung around their knees, they need a satin neck so they can move around quickly.
Yeah.
And it's, you know, that is it, a satin neck on like a punk guitar, that's kind of a standard. So it's a very weird thing to go through.
Let the sweat like roll in, and then, you know, that makes its own gloss. Yeah. I think this guitar is, you know, I guess my closing thought would be everyone expected this guitar to be out. I think a lot of people bought the Fender, but I've not really seen anyone play the Fender. Seems like they were hampered early on by a lot of bad reviews from like poor quality control, but I think that was only, you know, a handful.
Sure. It's hard to work out, isn't it? I feel Fender are getting hammered with this quality control issue at the moment, but I really can't work out if it is quality control or if it is that, you know, people love to hate the man sort of thing.
Yeah, it could be. I just think this is probably a guitar they've made for the fans rather than sort of moving the brand forwards, if you know what I mean.
Yeah.
You know, he's a very popular figure. They've got the Strat. He's obviously been, as you say, been out there playing gigs and not even really using the Strat, and he's been using this. So I think, you know, everyone expected this to be there, and a sort of the next generation, I guess, of sort of fans would want that one. I think it's a cooler looking guitar, in my opinion.
I think it's great.
You know, but maybe that's just because it's pink. I don't
know. As with all the Tom DeLonge signature models, they are very signature model. You know,
indeed. There's no, which is a good thing, you know, because what's the point in having a signature? What's the point in having a signature guitar if it's basically the same as every other guitar that you could buy? If you know what I mean, what's the point in it just being a slightly different version of something else that you could buy?
Yeah. But yeah, there it is. So a very cool guitar. I think an interesting discussion moving forward about the country of manufacture. Like, you know, see Gibson with Epiphone putting up the price of Epiphones made people go, oh, an Epiphone shouldn't be this price. What Fender have done is this probably should have Squire on the headstock. And they've put Fender on the headstock to get around being brought up on the whole pricing thing. I feel like that could be... Look, I still think it's a great guitar.
Yeah.
I just think it worries me. It worries me about, you know, I really like Fenders. I think the Mexican, you know, the Mexican build quality has been phenomenal through the years, and I'd hate to see them moving away from that. Yeah. So, but we will see.
Yeah, I think... I don't know. I think this is not going to be the biggest thing they launched this year, in my opinion. I think there's probably... I can't see this being in Gear of the Year, let's put it that way. Cool guitar, but I can't see it being in Gear of the Year.
Yeah, well, fair enough. I'm probably going to buy one of the House 95 ones instead, because they're a bit cheaper.
Yeah, and you can have the stickers.
Yeah, exactly.
Exactly. So there we go.
But that does bring us to the end, dear listener, of this week's episode of Guitar Nerds. Matt and I are going to head over to Patreon, where we will continue podcasting. We're going to talk about Matt's new H90 and how he's been getting on with that. We're going to talk about these new Moog clones, amongst other things. Do join us there. Patreon.com/GuitarNerds. This just leaves me to thank all of our top tier Patreon supporters. You can support the Patreon at a number of different tiers, but our top $10 a month tier Patreon backers, I would like to extend my personal thanks to. So thank you very much to Stefan Carlson, to Nicholas Strom, Rocket Rob Patterson, Phil Sadler, Marcus Deluxe, Suresh, Dorsonic Pickups, Rob Witherden, Anton Fryant, Barry Gresbick, Steve Davis, John Conaway, Yogi the Guitarist, Ty Allen, Carl Harris, Sean Hughes, Andy Hoffler, Eric Hemmer, Jeffrey Wax, Dan Pilver, Brian Einsler, Dylan Griffiths, Marcus Al-Kadawaki, Eric File, Peter Pesce, Chris Franklin, Andy Manley, Joe Puttick, Blake Weiland, Phil Radomski, Dave Lee, Ross Edwards, Jason Wharton, James Dorr, Jake Gray, Derek Rich, Scott Kennedy, Steve Merkel, Abe Matthews, Christopher Loseth, Stephen Bork, Robin Smith, Kytopia the Band, Andy McKenzie, Brad Page, Rob Nordvik, Scott O'Brien, and of course, Moog Gravit.
Of course.
Of course, indeed. Anyway, dear listener, thank you for tuning in. We'll be back next week with more of this guitar nerdery. And of course, keep your ear out for that special Blink-182 focused episode. Farewell.
Goodbye.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.